You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Friday, December 21st. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review on Apple Podcasts is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. Today's show is a full Draft Friday edition of the podcast. So Trevor Magnotti joins me to talk about two-way contracts, as well as Bol Bol, the Oregon center, who could be in consideration for the Cleveland Cavaliers. This was an episode for full clarity that was recorded a little bit ago, but due to some recording issues, just had to delay it until today. So some of the information will have changed, but the overall point of both segments will, I think, hold true. The Cavs do play tonight. They play the Toronto Raptors in Toronto at 7 p.m. That is going to be a very tough game for the Cavaliers. We'll have a recap of that game in the feed Saturday morning, so stay tuned for that, as well as full game coverage over at Fear the Sword. But you're going to hear from our sponsors real quick, and then you're going to hear from me and Trevor to talk about Bol Bol and what the Cavs are doing with two-way players. And joining me now for this week's draft breakdown, this week it's a double dose because we missed last Friday, it is Trevor Magnotti, a writer at Fear the Sword and The Step Back. Trevor, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for having me again.
It's always good to have you on. Glad we are back after the week off. So we're going to start this week by talking about some Cavs news that happened before we were going to record last week. So as everyone knows, the Cavs have two new two-way players, Jalen Jones and Jaren Blossomgame. They've both been playing with the team, which I think sort of that information that we have now does inform, I sort of think, what the Cavs are thinking there. But it meant Billy Preston, who to my knowledge yet, I do not believe has entered the G League player pool, which means he's not on the Canton Charge as of right now. So he is just kind of in purgatory now. But the Cavs have these two wings, 6'7". They're not really, I don't think, great prospects, but it marks a change, and it marks a change in really kind of what we thought they were doing with their two-way contract. So Trevor, I just want some people kind of understand, because I've gotten asked a lot about this about Preston. So when he comes into the NBA, and obviously he has the pedigree of being an All-American and whatnot in high school, very far away from being an NBA player, went undrafted, had the issues with at Kansas, whether that's because the NCAA is a cartel or whatever. Billy Preston is a bajillion years away from being an NBA player, right? Like, that is just like when you look at what he was coming into this NBA season, that's a fair read on him, correct? Like, there's no way he actually could have played real NBA minutes this year, even in a passable function on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of followed the same line of thinking during Summer League that our colleague Carter Rodriguez did, where he talked about that on his podcast. You saw Billy Preston in the first game, and you saw kind of everything that he was doing on the floor or not doing in a lot of cases. And it was just, nah, this guy's not ready. And, you know, he had good athleticism. He had his flashes of moments getting to the rim and had some decent defensive plays on simple stuff, but he just did not understand what was being asked of him on the floor. And that's the biggest hurdle for him right now, is he just does not have the mental side of the game down at all. And I think that that's the biggest area where he needs to improve. And I don't know that he's going to get another chance at that now, because he's too much of a development prospect. And that goes against you when you have as much baggage as he does, whether that's justified or not. And also, you already came into college old for your class, as he did. I think that's kind of a double strike against him. So, you know, just not really an enticing player didn't really show a ton of the promise that he did on the high school circuit for whatever reason, whether that was still the after effects of the injury that he suffered or whether that was just not or being that far behind the eight ball in terms of his development on the mental side of things. So it's just, you know, it's frustrating to see them give up on him this early just because, you know, you would like to see him with a little bit more development time put in. But at the same time, this team's at a spot where they need bodies and they need those two-way contracts to be guys who can potentially give them minutes in the NBA. And Preston was absolutely not going to be able to do that.
That is what I think this decision comes down to, because I don't think there's any way the Cavs could have not thought exactly what you just said, right? Like that this was going to be a project. I thought the appeal of signing Billy Preston to a two-way deal when they got him, and push back on me if you think this is incorrect. But I thought the appeal of signing him, as opposed to, like, you know, John Holland and London Perrantes last year, and no shade to those guys, just Preston had the potential to be something a little bit more than both of them, frankly. But it was going to take a lot of time, a lot of structure, a lot of development work for him. And while I do think it's worth noting that the Cavs did have an open roster spot, right? Like they could have signed someone, you know, to the end of their roster, but the two-way deal is a more cost-effective way of doing it, and I get that. It also just speaks to, like, it's very interesting to see to me how teams have approached two-way contracts so far. We're only in year two of this, but a guy like Preston to me seems like, for a team like the Cavs, sort of like the Suns, for example, you should be able to try to take your time and develop a guy like this in your system for a year and then go from there. But it also is very, very telling, as you said, that they cut the plug on him pretty early on in the process.
Yeah, I think that it does. I don't think that it really is like an indictment on how the Cavs are using their two-way contracts. I think that that's a very justified way to do it. And, you know, we've seen them with a guy like John Holland. We've seen them use one spot on the way that they're planning to use it now with Blossom, Game, and Jones in having a guy that's going to be potentially contributing to the roster. I think the problem or the root problem with Preston is that he did not prove to be even worth the development that the Cavs were going to try to put into him in that spot. And that's a very low bar to clear. And I would think that that has to be the reason that they're not keeping him around, is because he has not shown any progression to this point, and they have grown tired of trying to put that work in with no reward, while they have this playing time that needs to go to these potential guys that they now have here. I think they've definitely taken a path that's justified here with this decision, just because this is a team that, while it would be nice to have maybe a couple development prospects down in the G League, they need those development prospects also on the roster just to be able to give meaningful minutes. And Preston wasn't even going to be able to do that. This wasn't even a guy that you were going to want on the floor actively making mistakes on a bad team.
That is 100% what I've been told as well. So I think that firmly checks out. We have seen Blossom, Game, and Jalen Jones play. Trevor, let's just say in a vacuum, like, are these guys that have potential to be anything more than just, I read them as minutes fillers, and I don't mean that to like slam them. I just think that's what they were brought in to do. Is there a scenario where either of them, like, actually becomes a rotation piece, like, on the roster if they burn through their 45 days this year, or are signed and get a chance to, like, make the team next fall?
Yeah, I don't think either of these guys is around even past the 45-day mark. I think they're really just here to kind of show what they're worth, potentially earn a 10-day contract later in the season, or get picked up for some guaranteed money towards the end of the year. I think that's the incentive for these two guys right now. Both of these guys are 25. They both have significant holes in their game, and they're significant holes that we've seen from them so far. I mean, Jalen Jones had that nice game against the Wizards where he hit the four threes, but that's really all that he's able to do when he's out on the floor. He's really good moving around the perimeter, relocating, and has a pretty good catch and shoot shot, but that's about all that he's established in terms of skills at this point. Meanwhile, Blossom, Game, was one of the worst shooting prospects I have ever seen coming out of college. He shot, I believe, 22% from three as a senior at Clemson, was a redshirt senior because of an injury. So he was already 23. And that means he's in his second year in the league and he's already 25. So his development upside is already limited. And when you factor in the fact that he has potentially the worst shooting mechanic or among the worst shooting mechanics in the league with his really low release point and what I would almost term a three motion release, because he cocks the ball up, then jumps and then releases. And it's this really hitchy, really kind of gross mechanic shot. He doesn't really have much to offer then, because, you know, he's a really athletic player. He's a pretty good defensive player just because of his energy, but on offense he's a complete minus, and there's not really much to develop with him. Because if we were able to see improvement in that jump shot, we would have seen it by now, and I just don't think that that's going to be coming to the point where it's effective enough. And with Jones, I really don't see enough in his game, because he has no dribble shake at all. He doesn't seem particularly interested in putting the ball on the floor. And, you know, he's been passable as a defender for a team like the Cavs, but he's obviously not a good NBA defender. So you have one guy that is purely a catch and shoot specialist, and then another guy who is so bad offensively that he has almost no value on that end and probably never will. Neither of those guys are going to be guys that are going to be around long term. They're just here because the Cavs have no one that can play the four right now, and they just traded the one guy that they started the year playing at that position behind Kevin Love. And now Kevin Love's hurt, Decker's gone, and they have no options. So these are guys that they can actually put in for a few minutes a game, and they can fill time while we wait for Kevin Love to come back.
Yeah, and I think if David Nwaba, who's playing some four, was healthy too, that's another guy. I mean, I think in the injuries the Cavs have had, weirdly enough, to me, from just kind of analyzing this, inform what they've done with the two-way contracts more than anything, because I do know that they thought about calling up Preston, did feel he could do it. And if even in a season that they're having, if you don't feel a guy and it can come in just like, doesn't, it would be too much for him to just come in and try when you're this bad. I think that says something very, very specific to kind of round this up. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Bol Bol, who is a very, very fascinating college prospect. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers Draft Friday with Trevor Magnotti. And we're back. So Trevor, Bol Bol, I'm going to start off by saying this. Of the plethora of interesting guys in the top end of the draft, he is the one in the top, let's say, 10-ish or 6-ish or whatever, where you have him. And I know I've seen him across the boards, frankly. You know, I've seen him all over the place. He is the one that I feel like probably does not jump off to me as someone on the Cavs board. Now, that could change. You know, if Love and Tristan Thompson are gone, like, maybe he makes more sense. And if he is a really good 7-2 NBA player, like, that has a lot of value. But let's start there. Like, is he someone that, in the specific context of the Cavs, based on where you sort of project where they might be, is he worth keeping an eye on?
I think he is, just because if the Cavs aren't picking with the top two picks, then it really, really, you don't need to draft for fit. I mean, outside of Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, who look like they're probably going to go number one and number two right now, there's not a whole lot of star potential on that draft board. And Bol is one of the guys who, with a small chance, could eke out some potential or some star potential there. And he's a guy who, if they're taking the third or fourth pick in this draft, probably is going to be worth taking, even if they do have that potential logjam at the five. He is a guy who, if everything goes right for him, is going to be a star in this league, because he has such a unique skill set with his size and his length that he's going to fit somewhere on that potential unicorn big spectrum, because he's potentially a very good 3-point shooter and potentially a scheme changing rim protector. And guys like that don't come out every year. I mean, the fact that, or even when we look at all of the great bigs that we had last year, really only Jaren Jackson fits along that spectrum. And it's not a lock that he's going to be a strong, consistent three-point shooter at the NBA level.
Can I just say that I love Jaren Jackson? I just, like, I'm in love. And if like, you could tell me that you could draft a young big that could, like, be a defender like that, you catch my interest in a very high way.
Yeah, weird how I was right about that, and weird how everyone on draft Twitter was right about him being good. But as I sit here and watch DeAndre Ayton down 20 to the Spurs for, like, what seems like the eighth game in a row.
Oh, the Phoenix Suns. Like, look, I'm just going to say this. If you're a Cavs fan out there and you're, like, you're feeling, like, bleak about things, just go watch a Suns game. Palate cleanser. It's like eating sorbet during, or like chewing on ginger when you eat sushi. That is what watching the Phoenix Suns is. Continue.
It's very bad. But yeah, I think that I think that Bol has potential to be on that level eventually. He's going to take some development. It's going to be a long road to him becoming that all-star level player. But I think that the potential is there. And that's why I think even if the Cavs don't have the significant roster space to be able to make him a core piece right away, they still need to look at him, because he's probably the best shot at a star potential player in this draft outside of Barrett and Williamson.
Where is he on your board right now?
I am fifth. So he's in my second tier of players. He's on par right now with Timmy Chitu of Vanderbilt, who I have sixth, and then Nasir Little and Cameron Reddish right behind Williamson and Barrett. So I have him right at the edge of the top five, kind of right in that range where the Cavs could be looking if they don't get one of those top two spots.
What would you say the thing that is the most intriguing about his game in terms of, let's, like, the defense? Obviously, I think you can go watch a highlight tape and get a good idea of, like, what he could be as a defender. But offensively, what interests you about him as an offensive player?
It's the 3-point shooting. Just the fact that he is able to take 3-pointers off the dribble at this level. He doesn't even have very good shot mechanics. He brings the ball back really far, partially because he has to, because he has such long arms. He kind of cocks the ball back, and it's almost like a little bit of a catapult motion where he brings it back and then shoots it up. But it's an overall pretty quick release for the physics involved with that shot. When you have a 7'8" or higher wingspan, whatever he's at right now, I really think that he potentially could become like a Joel Embiid level 3-point shooter, where he's, you know, using 1 to 2 dribble moves out of a pick and pop to be able to create separation, get that extra little bit of space, and be able to fire off the dribble. I think that he's a guy who potentially could be doing that at the NBA level. I also like his pick and roll finishing package. When you combine those two skill sets, the fact that he can, or that he potentially might have some shooting off the dribble quality, and is going to be a guy who is is great at catching the ball in traffic, going up, and has really good touch on those pick and roll finishes, that's a center that's really hard to stop at the NBA level.
What are your concerns? What are the big concerns about him as a prospect right now? If you're looking at what he's going to be.
Well, you look at his block numbers, and you look at his wingspan, and you look at him defending in space, and his margin for error is so big, and that is the thing that everybody points to. It's almost going to be impossible for him to not at least be a passable defender, just because he can erase his own mistakes and does so night in and night out, consistently possession to possession with Oregon. My concern is that he at times looks like he has no idea what he's doing on the defensive end. He will have plays where he looks like a generational wing or rim protecting prospect. And then the next possession, the other team will come down. They will run a simple action. He will get lost in the paint, and they will give up an easy bucket because he is not in position. He is so bad on the in a play recognition and play finishing aspect that I think that that potentially could equal out what his length and what his shot or what his shot blocking ability end up bringing to the defense, because he's almost a little bit, I would put him on par with DeAndre Ayton in that regard right now. He is so far behind the eight ball in terms of recognizing what the offense is doing and being able to anticipate those actions, and then also being able to finish those plays, make that necessary rotation over to a cutter coming towards the rim, being able to recognize that the ball's up in the air and grabbing that defensive rebound. Those types of things are the things that are just lacking from his game right now, particularly on the defensive end of the ball. And that's what worries me, is that he's going to come in and he is going to be a significant work in progress for those first few years to become a good defensive player, even with his shot blocking ability, because it's just going to be something that doesn't end up mattering because he's giving up as many open baskets as he takes away.
What are Robert up in this? Like when he's playing in Oregon right now, when people watch Oregon, what's something about how Oregon plays that people should keep in mind when they're watching? Is there something about their style of play, how they play defense, that is a little tick that people should make sure they're kind of making sure they're staying cognizant of as things go on?
Well, I think that one thing that helps hide how iffy Bull can be as in that play recognition aspect is the fact that he's playing next to a very good athletic rim protector in Kenny Wooten. And when those two work together, they actually looked pretty good on the defensive end, because Wooten is able to make those little rotations and make those play finishing plays that will make the overall defensive numbers look a little bit better than they actually should be. So I think that's the biggest thing to keep in mind, is that Oregon basically is playing with two functional NBA potential rim protectors on the floor for good stretches of the game. And that kind of ends up elevating what Bull's defense looks like, because his team numbers are pretty good. It's when you actually get on the film and you actually look at what's happening outside of his highlight block plays, and you're seeing that more often than not, he's out of position and not making the necessary play to be able to get a defensive finish on the possession. That's kind of what's nerve-wracking about watching him play, is it's just that inconsistency is so pronounced, and it's kind of erased a little bit by having that other really, really good really good rim protector there. Oregon's perimeter defense also isn't very good. It's been better now that Lewis King is back on the floor. It'll be interesting to see if he's able to kind of boost it up. He's a 6'9 freshman wing who's actually looked pretty good defensively in his limited time. He's coming back from a knee injury. But overall, I think just the combination of Bull and Wooten has worked out pretty well for that team, and it's kind of masking a little bit what we're seeing from him as a rim protector.
You can find Trevor's work at Fear the Sword every week. He writes a great draft watch guide at Fear the Sword, as well as he'll do some breakdowns in the coming weeks and months, because the draft is going to keep mattering and mattering and mattering for this Cavs team, and I will harp on that forever and ever and ever. And you can also read his work at The Step Back. Again, find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, as always, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to today's Locked On Cavaliers. We're going to be back again tomorrow morning with a recap of Cavs Raptors, and then we'll be back one more time before the quick holiday break on Sunday for a recap of Cavs Bulls. Again, find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on those same social media platforms at CWM Writes. Enjoy tonight's game, and we'll be back again first thing tomorrow morning with a recap of Cavs Raptors. I'm Chris Manning, your host. Thanks again for listening. Have a good Friday.